My name is Dario Hasenstab. I'm here with Balder Hagrids, and we are back with the Western Bubble podcast. Today, we're talking about Vladimir Putin amassing troops along the Ukrainian border. He now has amassed about 150,000 troops there. Oh, no. Sorry, Balder. Today, we're talking about Venezuela and the United States having amassed 15,000 troops off the coast of Venezuela and threatening to go in. Balder, we're talking about the Western Bubble.
Indeed, the West being the West. Good to be here again, Dario. My apologies to listeners. I have again a little bit of a cold. I hope it doesn't disturb them too much. Venezuela, it's been many, many years that the Venezuelan people have this unresolved issue that they are struggling with a government that's not working. There's nothing new there. But what is new is that the Trump administration is beating the war drums. And that is a, well, concerning observation, because not that we, as far as I'm aware, I can talk for you as well, Dario, that we have any sympathy for Maduro, but the idea of Western countries invading other countries has never gone well in the past, and it's something that we should be incredibly skeptical of, both for the Venezuelan people as well as for everyone else involved, and therefore it's worth discussing.
I mean, there's also just a bunch of Venezuelan friends, right, that I have, kind of, who've shared their story over the past years with me. And so, of course, there's very little sympathy for someone like Maduro. I also remember that right about when I started university, that's when the protests in Venezuela kind of flared up, and there was some form of hope. Oh, okay, very intensive protest. I remember talking to a friend from university whose father was very actively participating in the protests, and so I was very much influenced by the, let's call it, situation in Venezuela early on in my international relations career. And then you had the whole situation with Guaido, and we've actually recorded a few episodes, well, at least one episode about that topic. And now it just seems to be going a little bit out of control, because we're no longer talking about the West no longer seeing Nicolas Maduro as the legitimate president of Venezuela because of elections that are questionable, to say the least. But now we're actually talking about regime change.
Yeah, and this is one of those things that you think, how often does history need to repeat itself, right? I mean, the parallels with the Iraq War are so blatant. Now, I'm not convinced that Trump is actually going to invade Venezuela. I mean, it might happen, because, I mean, they are amassing enormous military might in the Caribbean. But it seems to be a little bit outside of his MO, right? It's not the way that Trump usually operates. He doesn't like starting these kinds of conflicts. And going into Venezuela is an enormously risky operation from a US perspective, let alone for the well-being of the Venezuelans. But if it does happen, then you just have to think, like, how often are we going to do the same thing? And what is wrong with the West? Why does the West think that through military action they can resolve these issues? And again, it's got nothing to do with the well-being of the Venezuelan people. It's not about Maduro being a legitimate leader. Clearly he isn't. He's a bad leader. He's bad for the Venezuelan people. He is surrounded by a group of people that are focused on pure control. It has nothing to do with ideology. It's got nothing to do with Venezuelan well-being. Zero sympathy for Maduro. But going in, invading a country as complex and as big as Venezuela is just insanity, if you remember what happened in 2003 and over again before and after.
And we have, I don't want to say praised, but at least we have complimented Trump in the past for not playing that Western game, right? For kind of saying America first. I don't want to have any American troops, right, involved in any of these activities. There have been too many bloody wars in the past. I don't like wars, and therefore we're not going to start any new ones, right? And I mean, that's something that the two of us have applauded.
Indeed, and I'm always kind of happy to be able to do that, because there's no point in just behaving as if everything is dark and evil about the Trump administration. A lot of it, I would argue, is dark. There is a lot of problems that the United States is facing. But compared to the Democrats, compared to George W. Bush, and then before that, Clinton and George H. Bush, etc., Donald Trump has been relatively good in not using the enormous might of the United States military to actually solve foreign policy issues. He's been threatening to countries, we've discussed that many times, but he is inherently kind of viewing himself as a businessman, as someone who doesn't want to start expensive, complex, dangerous wars because it just doesn't suit him. And if he were to do it now, it would probably be because there is some kind of internal fear for the domestic situation in the United States, and he hopes that by starting a military conflict abroad, that distracts from the situation at home, right? There might be a situation that the White House actually looks at the polling numbers, looks at the way that Americans are viewing the administration, saying we need to change this, as various other administrations have done in the past, by military action.
And that's something he has done before. I mean, not never on the scale of boots on the ground, but I mean, we've just recently talked about Trump ordering strikes on Iran, right, on the nuclear facilities. So for him, right, if it's a clear and easy victory, right, it's something that he can sell at home of, you know, I'm the big and strong guy here in the world. I'm the most powerful person in the world, and let me show it once in a while. He does so, right? So he did this with Iran when the Israelis already took out all the air defense and he knew this was a clear victory. And he has been doing this for the last 3 months in the Caribbean with, so as of November 15th, and we're recording this on the 28th of November, there have been 21 US strikes on little vessels in the Caribbean, resulting in at least, right, according to media reports, in 83 deaths. And two people luckily survived. And that's something that he has been doing, right? And that's something that, I mean, we've criticized in an episode before, but it kind of fits the pattern where he can sell this off at strong American might. I don't have a lot of costs here. No US soldiers are dying, but I'm tackling the problem of drugs because these little boats are allegedly bringing, which is wrong, bringing drugs into the United States.
Yeah, and the supposed drug boats, but also the strikes on Iran, are something that the American people can't verify, right? It's not even about it being a victory or not. I don't think that there was any real victory in Iran, but Trump can sell it as such because nobody really knows. We don't have the information. We do not have a yardstick to judge whether the military action in those cases was successful or not. We don't know whether Trump has been killing 83 fishermen or 83 violent drug dealers, or something else. So the problem with actually going for military strikes directly against the regime is that Trump would actually have to show successful regime change. Because as long as Maduro will still be there, he will be seen as a failure. And that's exactly why Trump is likely to not want to do that, because it's too risky that he looks like a loser afterwards, which was never a risk that he had with Iran or with the drug boats. People seem to horribly underestimate the complexity of Venezuela. Not complexity in terms of who is right and who is wrong, just complexity in terms of there is no clear process in which the group around Maduro will give up power. And there's too many skeletons in the closet, there's too much history. And at the same time, there's no clear replacement. We know that Trump likes Machado, the Nobel Peace Prize winner, but there is no way that automatically leads to a prosperous, happy Venezuela where everyone will support her. And so, if he does this, he's taking a risk that would be very uncharacteristic.
I just want to mention that the only reason why he likes Machado is because she said, "Oh, does Trump, does Peace Prize winner gone to Trump?" right? Because he's being played like a fiddle by anyone and everyone around him. I mean, so you mentioned that, right? He kind of started this as a war on drugs, let's call it that, and that's also the justification he uses against Maduro, right? That he says he's a drug trafficker. He's now also a terrorist. You know, he's a terrorist because whatever that means, right? We've talked about this extensively before, but it has led him to amass about 15,000 troops in the region, right? And there's additional personnel in Puerto Rico, and there's an aircraft carrier now in the region. There are special ops, a submarine, right? And a bunch of other kind of like surface warships, different types of ships that I'm not familiar with. That's a significant size of the American military, That's just floating off of the coast of Venezuela. I cannot begin to describe how crazy this is, and that's exactly why I started the episode with a little joke of that throwback to 2022 when for months we saw Putin amass troops at the border of Ukraine, and there was this debate: is this a military exercise? Is he actually invading? Is he not? Why would you do that if you aren't planning on doing something with it? Yeah, of course, posturing—that's something Trump likes to do, but it's scary.
Well, and why I thought at the time that Putin wouldn't do what he eventually did was that the chances of success in the terms that Putin framed it were very low, right? The moment that he invaded, he actually talked about regime change in Kiev. He said, get rid of the fascist, get rid of Zelensky. I mean, fascist is a word that he used, it's not my word. And at that moment, you put an enormous burden on yourself to actually accomplish what you're supposed to accomplish. If Putin had said, we are going to defend Russian minorities in the East, and we're gonna, integrate or annex the regions that are already kind of controlled by us, then that would have been much more feasible. But he put the bar so high, Putin, that it became almost mission impossible. And that is the danger that Trump is facing with Venezuela. Now, I assume, but again, obviously I've got no inside information whatsoever, that their hope is that it's a quick targeted strike against key people and that the Venezuelan military will then just fold, right? So basically, special forces, if they were going to do something, then it would look something like this. Special forces go into the capital, go to specific palaces, go to specific bunkers where they know that the crowd around Maduro is. They either kill them or they arrest or at least, kidnap them back to the United States is probably a better word. In the hope that there will not be further bloodshed and that the Venezuelan military will say, okay, fair enough, we're changing side now. That must be their thinking. But that is very hopeful thinking, and I'm not sure if they could ever pull that off.
See, and the next reason why I'm concerned is, right, there are of course always these different stages to these military operations or invasions or whatever you want to call them. This is a podcast, so I don't have to, right? In case I'm not very specific about my words, I think cut me some slack. But one of the worries that I have is that they're now Trump's lackeys who are starting to prepare the Trump's base for this happening. And here we've done this in the past, and we want to do this more in the future. Of also letting our listeners kind of see and well listen to the kind of to the insanity that we sometimes have to listen to in the research for these episodes, and we now want to watch, and the listeners will listen to it, a video and an interview on Fox Business, right? So Fox News, from the 25th of November, of Maria Elvira Salazar, who is a U.S. representative for Florida, right, in the House of Representatives, and she is saying some interesting things. I'm going to say this without any judgment for now, on here, and we're going to listen to this in a. Right, we will stop in between and kind of let you know of our thoughts. And so let's begin with the first part, right, where the interviewer is kind of introducing her, talking to her, and particularly talking about the United States designating Maduro as a terrorist.
So the U.S. has just designated the Maduro regime, essentially because of their association with this group, a foreign terrorist organization. That is big news. That kind of puts Maduro, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't it put Maduro in the same category as former Panamanian dictator Noriega, who the U.S. went in and got and changed that regime?
Correct, and thank you for the opportunity. Not only Noriega in 1989, but Osama bin Laden. So starting at midnight tonight, Nicolas Maduro and his gang is officially a terrorist organization, and he is the head of a terrorist organization, which according to our United States laws puts him right in the crosshairs. We can take him out, We can extradite him, and we can go in and try to finish his regime. So good news for the Venezuelans who have been waiting for years to be liberated, and very good news for the American economy, which I'll explain to you why this is a number one goal for this administration from the economic standpoint.
Balder, very good news for the Venezuelan people. They will be liberated from a terrorist whom the United States now has the right to take out.
Yeah, I'm not Venezuelan, but I am fairly certain that a very large majority of Venezuelans would not be unhappy to see the current government disappear. However, if you listen to what she just said, and it's very much in line with what you said before when it comes to Trump basically talking about Maduro as a terrorist, it's a fascinating kind of mental exercise, right? Where this something that started after 9/11 during the war on terror, where essentially in a world with Westphalian rules, where you just have a leader, currently Maduro is the leader of Venezuela, like it or not, it's the reality. You then designate him a terrorist, and with that, then anything goes and nothing else matters. He's now, the United States has said he's a terrorist, so no rules apply anymore and you can do whatever you like. Well, that of course goes against the very foundation of our international system. There is a reason why we've got Westphalian rules, because we do not want a world where the powerful can just get away with literal murder, right? That leads to all kinds of horrible future scenarios. The idea that this is some kind of easy liberation, as we've just discussed before already, is of course also complete insanity. And the comparison with Panama and Noriega, I'm old enough to remember that. I mean, Venezuela is not Panama. These are two completely different countries. I think I'm correct to say that Venezuela has like 7 or 8 times as many people than Panama. It's way larger. It has way more complex politics. And it's just crazy how then that example gets used to basically justify potential military action.
Yeah, I mean, Venezuela, difficult, right? The population of Venezuela is sometimes difficult to determine because there's 29 million people estimated to live in Venezuela. However, there's millions of Venezuelans living all across the world, right? There's a few million living in Colombia. There's a lot that have gone to Spain, also to the United States, because they've had to flee the Maduro government in the past few years. And Panama is somewhere 4 or 5 million people, if I remember correctly. Yeah, but of course, it's a massive difference. And that's something that she also doesn't seem to understand. I also love how she immediately compares him to Osama bin Laden, because, right, that's the worst terrorist that Americans can think of. So that's the guy.
But it's such twisted logic. It is this, look, the fact that United States designates someone a terrorist doesn't mean anything by itself. I mean, it might have some repercussions for the legal system within the United States, right? Because, of course, you've got more freedom to fight terrorists than anyone else in the United States. Okay. But at an international level, it is just one country designating someone a terrorist. That's it. There's no other. It has no implications for the global world order. It has no implications for how we view each other. It's not that long ago that the current government in Syria was on the terrorist list. And now he got invited to the White House, right? There is basically a little trick that they think makes sense. But once you think about it for longer than 2 minutes, it falls apart. This idea of, okay, from now there's a judge who has said that Maduro is a terrorist. At that moment, we can do whatever we like. It's not how the world is supposed to work.
Let's continue with listening to this lady.
But there are some Americans. I mean, I would love to see a change in government. My wife's from Nicaragua. We know how terribly the dictators there rely on Venezuelan oil. But at the same time, a lot of Americans don't want actual U.S. participation in regime change in Venezuela. They would much prefer the Venezuelans to do it on their own. Do you think the pressure that Maduro has received will force him to leave on his own?
I'm gonna, before she answers this question, I do want to answer it myself. I mean, it's interesting, right? It's almost like Americans voted for Trump because they were tired of all these invasions and all these wars. And it's almost like Americans say that on the daily. But, you know, it's an evil dictator who also supports other evil dictators, and therefore it's kind of okay.
Of course, and this idea that that Venezuela will just completely radically change overnight and immediately basically become this prosperous ally of the United States is seems very far removed from reality. The political upheaval and the complex political nature of the country are not at all that straightforward. So if you simplify it into, hey, evil terrorist dictator, should get rid of him and it's good for everyone and it's going to be easy, then you're making the mistakes that Americans and Europeans have made over and over again throughout history.
Yeah. Also, I mean, is this going to help us, right? Us, quotation marks. So is this going to help bring the Maduro regime? You know my personal dislike for that word. I think that in the West, we only ever use the word regime if we talk about a government we don't like, while a regime is really just a type of government, right? Like a democratic regime or an autocratic regime. But do you think that this will help us topple the Maduro regime, the pressure?
No, the pressure, I mean, this is a question that goes more towards Venezuelans themselves, right? So I don't think that I am the one who should provide that answer. However, I do remember, you mentioned Guaido early on, I've mentioned a lot of pressure that Maduro has been under, essentially from the moment he took power. Remember that this is a guy who, in any other situation, would never have had the charisma or arguably even the intelligence to reach the top. He was put there by Chavez, who then died in 2013. And since then, Maduro has been under enormous pressure in Venezuela. There was this moment that I remember being at university, and a lot of Venezuelan students were thinking that day when Guaido actually, you know, did a thing with his phone and said, today we're marching to the palace and this is the moment that everything's going to change, that there was this sentiment like, hey, this is it. This is where we go. Since that moment, which of course failed, it didn't lead to regime change. Apologies for using that word. Since that moment, I would argue that Maduro has probably strengthened his position, also because he's had significant support from Russia and China, and there is arguably greater stability within the politics of the system than 5-10 years ago. So, I mean, anything is possible, right? But from the outside, there is not much sign that Trump only has to do one or two little things and the Venezuelan people will rise up and Maduro will have to flee. That is way too simplistic.
Well, that's Baldur. I mean, yes, you are a foreign policy expert, but this lady, you know, she is a part of the House of Representatives in the United States. So let's see what she has to say about this.
Oh, I think Maduro is not Fidel Castro. Maduro is not a brave boy. So now that he has understood that he is on that very nefarious list of the terrorist organization, that the airspace above Venezuela has been closed off and the commercial airlines from the United States are not flying, he's understanding that we're about to go in. He understands that he has been our enemy for the last 25 years.
Baldur, didn't you mention earlier that Maduro only came to power in 2013 when, right?
Yeah, it could be a slip up, small slip up. Like she means Chavez and Maduro together, but of course it's crazy to act as if that was one and the same. Again, no sympathy for Chavez, but Chavez was a completely different figure with a completely different dynamic than Maduro. Let's give her the benefit of the doubt. I don't think we should, but let's be generous and say that she misspoke. This idea that just by putting him on the terrorist list and closing off airspace, by the way, without any indication that there might be international relations issues associated with that, right? I mean, no indication of any kind of sense of global order, no attempt to at least pretend to be a good citizen of the world. It is, of course, silly to call him also not a brave boy. I mean, besides the silly language, it's not about whether Maduro is brave or not. It's about what are his interests. He has been a survivor thus far, and it's not at all obvious that he will say, okay, now I'm really in danger, I will go. I expect that at the moment there is a lot of communication between Moscow, Beijing, and Maduro about what can you offer me? What kind of support can you offer me? What is going to happen if the United States actually takes action against me? And so, again, I'm not making predictions of what is and isn't going to happen, but the simplistic nature of viewing this issue is so reminiscent of past adventures that went horribly wrong.
Well, that is indeed something that is already happening, right? I mean, there have been reports of Maduro reaching out to Russia, for sure. However, Baldur, he's about to present three of the reasons to the Americans of you know, why this is not bad. You know, and again, maybe she just slipped up with the numbers. Maybe she meant to say 15 years, which would still be wrong, but closer to the truth. Let's see.
Venezuela, for those Americans who do not understand why we need to go in, for three reasons. You're in Fox Business. Venezuela, for the American oil companies, will be a field day because it will be more than $1 trillion in economic activity. American companies can go in and fix all the oil pipe, the whole oil rigs, and everything that has to do with the Venezuelan petroleum companies, or anything that has to do with oil and the derivatives.
I know that all the trends from the early 2000s and the late 90s are currently back in fashion, right? Clothes and everything. But it also seems like American reasoning for U.S. foreign policy is back in fashion from the 1990s, that, hey, Paul, there's a lot of oil in Venezuela.
I vividly remember, I'm now actually doubting, I said vividly remember, but I'm doubting whether it was Rumsfeld or Cheney, one or the other, who went on TV and said, hey, the invasion of Iraq is actually going to pay for itself because of its oil. It's going to be very easy. We'll go in, we'll take the oil in order to pay for the effort of democratizing Iraq, and the Iraqis will be grateful for our assistance. Of course, history turned out to be completely different, but she is essentially echoing those words. And to me, I don't know what I find more disturbing, the lack of historical awareness that this is just a playbook that we've done before and it didn't work, or the immorality of saying, well, the United States can make a decision and then we will take the oil, or we will, you know, make sure that we control the infrastructure of Venezuela, and the Venezuelans will just have to accept it. It is so myopic. It is so U.S.-centered without any sense of well-being for the Venezuelan people that if I were Venezuelan and listened to her, I would be terrified, because you don't want this kind of friend. Even if you want to get rid of Maduro, this is not the way. You do not want the United States to repeat the mistakes that they made 20 years ago.
Because the invasion of Iraq did not pay for itself, right? It paid, it cost more or less $6 trillion US dollars, killed roughly 500,000 people. I mean, we've talked about this in the past, right? That you could have invested that money into research, into schools, into healthcare, into all these cool things that Americans are currently struggling with.
Some people did get very rich from the war. Of course, there were profits to be made, but not the American people, not the American taxpayer. The United States significantly weakened itself economically as well as diplomatically. And so the only situation where this somehow might work would be one, if it is that scenario that I've painted earlier, where some special forces quickly go in and everything falls into place, and Maduro just leaves or gets arrested or killed or whatever, and then Venezuela all of a sudden becomes this thriving ally of the United States. And then out of the kindness of the heart, the Venezuelans will say to the United States, oh, you've been so good to us, we will give you access to all our oil, and we will make sure that you can benefit. I mean, sorry, that is La La Land. That is not going to happen, not in that way.
Absolute La La Land. Let's continue in this La La Land that this interview is. She's about to list reason number two.
Number two, Venezuela has been the launching pad, the hub for our enemies, the Iranian, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Cubans, the Nicaraguans, people that hate the United States. And the only thing they want to do is do harm to us and to our young Americans.
I don't even know what to say. This is funny. I didn't know that Hezbollah, Hamas, Iran, the Cubans,
Nicaragua.
Yeah, all of them went to like a yearly summit in Venezuela, and then from there are launching something on the United States.
Terrorist strikes or something. Yeah, I'm a fairly keen reader of the news, but I do not remember reading anything about this, right? I mean, the, again, the sim- simplistic nature of what this representative is saying, the complete lack of actual understanding of reality, right? Of course, Hezbollah is not launching terrorist attacks from Venezuela. Of course, Nicaragua and Iran and Cuba and Hezbollah are not working together. Again, it is so ignorant. And these are the people who are pushing for this. And it should make anyone, even people who kind of like the idea of regime change in Venezuela, should make them very, very concerned. This is not a serious plan. These are not serious people who truly understand the world in the way that it should be understood. On top of that, it once again is very reminiscent of Iraq, right? For those of too young to remember, Saddam Hussein was no fan in any way, shape or form of Al-Qaeda. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with Al-Qaeda. They actively disliked Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was a threat to him. And yet, in the lead up to the invasion in 2003, there was media personality after media personality going on TV saying that somehow there was a connection with 9/11. That Saddam Hussein somehow was responsible. Without any kind of factual backup, right? And so that is what we're seeing again right now. How is it possible that within a generation we're using exactly the same language and we're doing exactly the same thing?
I mean, the very important thing for me to point out here is, right, we're kind of making fun of this, let's just call her a confused lady. And so maybe some of our listeners might have the feeling of, oh yeah, but these are the stupid Trump people, right? And they, of course, they have these bogus reasons. No, like yes, as of now at the moment, yes. But 20, 30 years ago, this was the intellectuals doing this, right? So these were basically the Democrats and the Republicans jointly doing that and kind of cheating themselves with different mental shortcuts into going to war, right? I mean, what we call the Western bubble in the end. The current version of the Western bubble is just a very sad and clownish one. But the very serious underlying conditions that lead to this thinking are within most of us. And I hope less so in our listeners than in others.
Insider, outsider models, the good guys versus the bad guys, either you're with us or you're against us. It is this kind of idea that we, the good guys in the West, can decide who are the evildoers. I'm using that word because George W. Bush used it. Who are the bad guys? And we are not just entitled, but also almost responsible for holding those people to account, punishing them for their evil nature. It is such a insane kind of worldview. The United States is, of course, particularly bad at that, even the intellectuals that you mentioned, because the neoconservative movement during the war in Iraq and Afghanistan were intellectuals. They came from serious people. They were intelligent people. And so, yeah, now we've got the clown version, but the idea is still the same. Americans somehow dividing the world into good and evil, and once you're evil, once you're a terrorist, then that's it, and anything goes.
Okay, I don't think she will turn around with a third reason. However, let's give her the benefit of the doubt. And also just for completion, right? We'll listen to the last part.
And number three, he is the head of the Sons Cartel, which is one of the transnational criminal organizations. In 2020, Nicolas Maduro was indicted by a federal grand jury for drug trafficking, and he is the head of the Sons Cartel. So right there, the economy, security, and politically speaking, we're going to be doing a favor to us, to our children, to our economy, to our oil companies, to be able to liberate, and to the Venezuelans, that they do want to be free.
Here she really exposed herself, right? Because she's talking about, oh, we're doing a favor to us, to ourselves, to the children, oh, and to the Venezuelans, right? It's never been about the Venezuelans for them, right? It's only about themselves.
And I would be running scared if I were Venezuelan listening to this. It is obviously not about Venezuelan well-being. Your average American doesn't even know where Venezuela is on the map. Let's be real here.
Somewhere between Iran and North Korea.
With Hezbollah going up and down.
Depending on which way around the globe you go. Yeah, luckily, the Earth is round and this makes sense.
Well, it is just so blatant. It's so obvious. On top of that, you already have determined that Maduro is a terrorist, according to your standards. It's almost as if, hey, if you're not convinced by the fact that we have to fight terrorism, now I'm going to also emphasize that he's a drug dealer and all that, which is, of course, all more complex. I wouldn't be at all surprised. We do know that there were issues within the Maduro family and all that. So, I mean, it's not a crazy idea that there's some drug money involved. But it's just like, let's take some facts that we know and just put a label on there so that the American people understand that this is a really, really bad guy. He's not just bad because he's a terrorist. He's also really, really bad because he is a drug dealer. And if we get rid of him, then your children will be safe from drugs in the United States, right? That is the kind of mentality that she's projecting here. And it's just so stupid. It's just so nothing. It's so empty. And these people should not be anywhere near power. And yet here we are listening to them.
Boulder, let's be honest. This is probably really just the crazy Americans, right? I mean, in Iraq too, there were also not all of the Europeans were involved. So I'm sure the Europeans right now are the good guys. And they have a very strong reaction. And by my tone and voice, the listeners will have figured out by now that, of course, that's not the case. And it's more the lack of a reaction that's standing out, at least to all of this, because there really hasn't been any serious statement by the Europeans saying that, dear United States, dear Donald, please don't go to war.
No, there's some vague blabbing about it violating international law, you know, that a number of European leaders have emphasized that. But it's clear that Europe has no interest in really picking a fight with Trump. It is Europe doesn't have an identity at the moment. They don't know who they want to be. They want to make sure that they can still do business with the United States. They want to appease Trump. And as a result, they are just vaguely showing their displeasure without giving Trump or the White House any sleepless nights, of course, right? They could, if they wanted to, they could say, if you do this, we've got a real problem. If you do this, we are going to have serious questions about the viability of NATO. We're going to have serious questions about our trade relations with you, et cetera, et cetera. But European leaders are not interested in taking a stand because they just want to manage the next 1 or 2 years and ensure that economic growth isn't harmed too much.
Well, again, I'm going to kind of bring up the European leaders and their attempts to stop Putin from invading in 2022. There were weekly phone calls, right, with Scholz going to Moscow, Macron going to Moscow, right? One leader after another doing those efforts, right, trying to avoid this. So either the Europeans are not taking the United States very seriously in Trump and don't think that this is an option at all, or, as you said, they're cowards. And if I look at the statements of the German foreign minister, all right, who kind of said that no one has any interest in further crises arising, but he also added that Venezuela must show restraint. I mean, that's all I need to see. I mean, I do not see Venezuela being the aggressor in this scenario.
Obviously not. Venezuela is not going to be the one who starts a conflict with the United States. That's completely clear. I do think what you said before is correct, that I think European analysis, and that would also be my analysis, is that it's unlikely that Trump is actually going to go for a full-blown invasion. The smart money is in either a scenario where Trump is bluffing, just trying to distract and nothing actually happens except for killing some fishermen in the Caribbean, or it's going to be a very targeted strike that if it fails, then it fails and Trump withdraws. And if it succeeds, then Trump looks like the major leader. The idea that the United States would actually commit very significant troop numbers to Venezuela seems very far-fetched at this moment. And they must be hoping, Europeans must be hoping, that this is the case, that Trump will back off or that it will be very minimal. But of course, what that means is that countries such as China and India look at this and they think, hang on, so Europe has absolutely no principles anymore, has no backbone anymore. They don't care. They just want to appease the White House and that's it, which is gonna harm the relationship between Europe and the rest of the world quite significantly. This goes all the way back to the trade issues, the tariffs and all of that. The result of this is that Europe is basically rudderless in an anarchical world. Nobody knows what they stand for. And it's embarrassing to be a European and a taxpayer.
Yeah, and a taxpayer. I'm glad you added that.
Yeah, these people get paid with my taxes and it shames me.
Yeah. And the last part or the last little topic of this episode I want to focus on is the kind of the Western left responding to this? Because as we said at the beginning of this episode, 5 years ago, everyone knew who the bad guy was in this situation. It was Maduro, and the good guy was Guaido. Now it seems to be, now the left doesn't really know whom to dislike, right? Because the left dislikes Trump and kind of dislikes Maduro, but suddenly Maduro is the legitimate leader of Venezuela again, which he wasn't according to the West 5 years ago.
This is absolutely astounding to me. This is something that I simply cannot wrap my head around. Relatively or very intelligent people who often get it right on a number of things now either seem to think that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Hey, if you're Trump's enemy, then you're going to be my friend. And Maduro clearly at the moment is Trump's enemy, so therefore I'm going to... Or they seem to think that Maduro somehow is some kind of idealistic socialist slash communist leader who actually tries to do the best for the Venezuelan people. Both of these takes are, of course, ridiculous. You can't just make Maduro your friend or a legitimate leader because he is opposed by Trump. That's not how reason works. And the idea that Maduro has any kind of ideology favoring the Venezuelan people is, of course, also complete insanity. There's nothing about Maduro's leadership, his government, the people around him, because again, it's mostly the people around him more than he himself. There is nothing that should be celebrated about him, right? And so it shows what a crazy tribal world we live in these days, that we cannot mutually reject a military intervention while at the same time reject Maduro's leadership. It's as if you have to pick sides, and if you don't pick sides, then you're weak, or then you are somehow obfuscating moral issues. Whereas it's completely obvious that those two things can coexist together. Not like in Maduro, believing that Maduro is bad for the Venezuelan people, and at the same time believing that it's bad to militarily invade other countries. Those two things should coexist, and yet it seems that certain segments in the political left in Europe and also the United States can't do that anymore. They're just so trained to think in good versus evil, just like the Trump administration is trying to portray this issue towards the American people, that they believe Trump bad, therefore Maduro good. And it's desperate. It makes me desperate to observe that. I mean, what is going on with our world?
This seems like a great moment to end today's conversation on the United States potentially invading Venezuela. If you have any questions, comments, or you had a mistake that we've made throughout the episode, please make sure to send us an email to thewesternbubble@gmail.com, and we will try to incorporate them in our following episodes. Thank you very much to the listeners for joining us today. Make sure to join us again next week when we burst the Western Bubble. That is it from my side. Balder, which closing quote did you pick for us today?
It seems appropriate to go back to the war in Iraq. We've already mentioned it during this episode. And let's take a quote from Anthony Zinni, who was a high-ranking general in the U.S. Armed Forces. And therefore, definitely not some kind of pacifist who dislikes military action. He said about the Iraq war, "In the lead-up to the Iraq war and its later conduct, I saw at a minimum true dereliction, negligence, and irresponsibility. At worst, lying, incompetence, and corruption."